Isn't this a sports show?
A couple of things. One from Brady on YouTube says, oh, so weird to look at you all after all this time listening on the pod. Yeah, there's a chance you've never seen us before, and this is what we look like. Three of the five hottest dudes on Twitch.
Almost entirely.
Unzip for the camera, Rudy.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Now, Beards, you did say slash and not plus. Are you only playing video games in either a hoodie or pajama pants?
I'll leave that to the imagination.
I would rather you leave less to my imagination.
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
I would like less imagination in this segment. But I've got Beards now getting out of a bath and then Winnie the Poohing while he's playing video games on the couch. This sucks. This is a stupid bad show and I hate it.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Happy Monday. We've got a crew, although a slightly different one on tonight's show. We'll have a regular guest and a debut. We'll have some fun, some serious, some silly, some just a straight up NFL draft hand in the dirt conversation. I'm getting a little self-conscious about how open my shirt is on the video feed right now. I want to undo another button. But it just sort of is coming off as pretty aggressive. Yeah, I feel like buttoning it back up all of a sudden. I look stuffy now. I think I got it. I think it's really the chain that's really underneath that's peeking through. It's the chain and the chest hair that I think is making it really look like I want to sell you drugs. But I won't and I can't while I'm on the radio. Show's over at 10. If you're in the parking lot, you're in the parking lot, you know? I got G Fuel to sell you. That's pretty much it. I'm Joshua Briscoe. That much clearly evident by the talk of me adjusting the button level of my Hawaiian shirt. Beards McFly on the other side of the glass, but Rudy Salazar under the weather and out of the show tonight. So we've called in, we've gone to the bullpen. We called in a reliever. We've made a minor league call up.
That's probably better.
Beards, how would you describe the adjustment we've made for tonight's show?
I'm trying to think if there's a good...
I think we've made the call-up.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think, and he's still got options. He's coming up and down a few more times before we run out of options. But Tucker D. Franklin in studio with us in the Rudy chair today, and we'll be playing Rudy for the remainder of the show. Say something about Johnny Juzang.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, the disrespect! Also, Tucker, don't be afraid to get right up on that microphone. And Beards, don't be afraid to turn Rudy's microphone
up.
Just up a little bit farther, maybe.
I'll get it closer. Is this close enough?
I mean, yeah, just if you stay in this range the whole time, if you're talking like you're afraid to scare a mouse, we're going to have a tough time tonight's show.
It's we're going
to
be good.
It's going to be fine.
We're good. We're
Everything
good.
Is great.
We're great.
Loving all of it. There's several things that that I want to talk about in a... I'll put it this way. I think we've gotten, over the course of this weekend, a pretty good amount of kind of funny, silly sports nonsense. Just because of some weird stories that have happened over the last several days. And we also have not really news for the Chiefs, because they still don't have a left tackle. They still have the same number of draft picks. They're in the same spots that they were whenever we were talking about it after the compensatory picks got locked in. Like, we're not necessarily tilling new ground at the moment, but we are still talking about it in all the ways that Sports Talk Radio does, where if we would have solved it 2 weeks ago, we would have lost 2 weeks of content. And I'm actually excited to talk to Tucker about all that over the course of today's show. And it will also obviously include, whenever we talk to Matt and Aaron both, we'll get into some Chiefs stuff, both the things that haven't been decided yet and the things that have in terms of what the free agency's meant, all that stuff. But as much as I do want to talk about A-Rod as quickly as possible, buying the Timberwolves, We got to talk about, there was a little piece, you guys are, Beards is chuckling, because earlier I said that A-Rod bought the Mariners, which I knew was not true. It's not the same sport. It's not the same city. It's not a similar team name.
It's not the same mascot.
Tim Mariners. Like, I think maybe that, I don't know. I know A-Rod played for the Mariners, and there were some people that were saying that maybe he wanted to move the team to Seattle, and that would be cool, because he would be, like, he would have come up in Seattle and then brought a basketball team there. Honestly, I just think he wanted to own a sports team very badly. We can get into all that later on, and we will, because that's what today's show is going to be about. But the actual sort of news of the day that is Chiefs, that is certainly Chiefs related, Chiefs adjacent, because it's about Britt Reid. Now, we've gone over this story in a variety of forms, a variety of ways. We talked about it right before the Super Bowl as it was all happening, obviously. We talked about the legal side of it a little bit whenever we talked to Daniel Lust, a sports law expert, a couple weeks ago, week or two ago. And one of the reasons I brought it up with Dan was that there were some people asking, like, hey, hold on, what's the timeline here? Is this fishy at all? Is there something else going on here in terms of why it's taken a while for Britt Reid to be facing charges formally? The GoFundMe account set up for the 5-year-old girl who's critically injured had they one of their updates said, hey, please don't forget about us and this girl. Britt Reid's out, you know, living his life. I'm paraphrasing. The thing that we got from Dan, though, the thing that Seth Kaiser tweeted about a couple of times, Real Bird Lawyer on Twitter, who is a real lawyer, also was tweeting about this. This was not a, just to kind of answer some questions on the front end, this was not a slower than usual process for bringing charges on a DWI. But Britt Reid has now been charged with a DWI, driving while intoxicated, from that incident that ended up wrecking a couple of cars and critically injuring the 5-year-old girl, as others at the scene were also injured. He ended up being rushed to the hospital shortly after the accident, had surgery there. We knew that. Andy Reid mentioned that after the Super Bowl, actually, which, again, I was kind of going back through a lot of this today, obviously, a little refresher and everything. And we knew it was crazy, but it's almost even crazier in retrospect to think that Andy Reid was going to either win or lose the Super Bowl, and his first postgame comments were going to have to be about a tragic accident that went really poorly and could have still gone worse. We didn't know at the time. The girl is stable now, but has suffered serious brain injuries as a result of this crash. But I'm going to read a little chunk of the original report from 41 Action News from their website. I think they had it first, at the very least. I thought they had a good summary that I'll give you now in terms of what's new today. I will say this also, Britt Reid, obviously, son of Andy Reid. I think everyone around here knows that. He was, I think, specifically outside linebackers coach, assistant coach on the defensive side in the Spags era of I think he actually may have been a defensive assistant for Sutton as well. He's been on both sides of the ball, though, if memory serves, and was a Chiefs assistant coach. They put him on administrative leave, and then his contract expired and was obviously not renewed. Just the point we're at right now. He is not an employee of the Chiefs, but obviously his dad is the head coach. Just a lot of layers. Here's what 41 Action News on the website had to say as the story was announced today. The Jackson County Prosecuting Attorney's Office announced Monday that Reid has been charged with a DWI, a Class D felony, with a potential jail sentence of 1 to 7 years. Prosecutors have requested a $100,000 bond. Reid, who served as outside linebackers coach on his father Andy Reid's coaching staff for the Chiefs, allegedly crashed his Dodge Ram pickup into two cars on the shoulder of the road shortly after 9 p.m. on February 4th, 3 days before the Chiefs played in Super Bowl 55, near the entrance ramp from Stadium Drive to southbound Interstate 435 near the Truman Sports Complex. Prosecutors said they have no indication that Reid was drinking at Arrowhead Stadium. I think that phrase is interesting because it has also come up. There's a couple details of this that I think are noteworthy. Dan Wetzel tweeted out this snippet. Prosecutors say Britt Reid had a blood alcohol concentration of 0.113 and was driving 84 miles per hour 1.9 seconds before hitting the disabled vehicle in the breakdown lane near Stadium Drive and I-435 in Kansas City, going 84 miles on a ramp 2 seconds before you make contact. Maybe he was able to slow down some before making contact. We don't know that, but that is really, really fast, and it helps put into context the pictures that we've seen and then also the damage done to the people involved. The Chiefs put out this statement. The Kansas City Chiefs organization remains steadfast in our concern for all who have been impacted by this tragic accident. Our prayers are focused on Ariel's continued healing and recovery. The Chiefs are regularly in contact with the family's designated representative during this challenging time. Honestly, I mean, it's a super toothless, very bland statement that an organization makes in a situation like this. I don't necessarily know if something different should have been said there. It's a corporate statement where a bunch of lawyers are about to be involved. And also the Chiefs' role in this could get more interesting and worse, I guess, depending on how you want to frame it. There could potentially be another level to it. More on that in a second. But the Chiefs didn't need to necessarily do more with that, I don't think. But it also isn't exactly, you know, some status quo resetting statement or whatever. Nate Taylor tweeted out a summary of some of the injuries to Ariel Young, the 5-year-old. He tweeted, the medical record showed that she sustained severe traumatic brain injury, left parietal fracture, brain contusions, and subdural hematomas. Brain, head, face sort of areas of injuries. The Chiefs-related thing is just that he was, as far as we could tell, I guess we don't know this necessarily, although I do think that this came up in one of the statements, but I will not say this with 100% confidence. But seems like he was leaving Arrowhead. We don't know that anyone at Arrowhead knew that he was drinking. We don't know that there were, like, enablers or that there will ultimately be a connection to the Chiefs at this point. But with all of the different layers of, again, this happening just a minute away from the facilities, and also the fact, I mean, there's also two separate levels. One is that the Zandy Reed's son, you know what I mean? That adds just a personal level to it, but it's also a Chiefs employee. I saw somebody tweet, and I think a lot of these conversations have been spurred on really disingenuously for the sake of coming up with something, basically. But someone said, well, do we connect any of this to Andy Reid or whatever? I do think it's slightly more levels to it with him being both Britt Reid's father and also boss, that I'm not sure, again, is going to... That doesn't make anyone with the Chiefs, including Andy Reid, like, responsible for Britt Reid's actions by any means. It's just really messy, which has been obvious from the jump. That's always where this was... I mean, this is always going to have all sorts of layers to it. But, in fact, I'm going to go ahead and keep going back to Daniel Lust, who again was on the show. We mostly talked about Deshaun Watson stuff before a lot of that change. We talked about name, image, likeness stuff. That was all interesting. If you want to hear that conversation, it's up in the podcast feed, as everything is. But what Dan had tweeted, as someone who has a much better grasp on the law side of all of these things. He also hears the snippet. I'm just going to quote from Dan at Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Britt Reid admitted to police that he had left work prior to the car crash. There's now a real possibility that his employer, the Kansas City Chiefs, will get brought into a civil lawsuit by the victim, the 5-year-old girl. He has the police report. He tweeted, quote, tweeting something from earlier, from March, saying the doctrine of, quote, respondent superior can make an employer liable for the acts of their employees if they are performed within the course of their employment. Here, the doctrine is potentially triggered by Reed's comments and is a PR nightmare given the severity of the injuries. So I'm retweeting that one also now because I had a harder time finding it than I'd like to admit. But I did find it. I have no idea how the legal process is going to play out in terms of, is Britt Reid going to go to prison at all? Is he going to go for 7 years? Is he going to, are they going to settle something civilly and maybe the criminal case doesn't end up being the focus? Will the Chiefs try to do something in terms of a settlement if they see themselves potentially being roped in at all? The issue is, I mean, it is definitely a criminal case. That's what's happening today. This isn't something that could be fully settled out of court, in my best understanding of it. But we got a little bit of, certainly not closure, because this is still a very open situation, but a little more information and a little bit more in terms of specifics today from the charges pressed against Britt Reid, again, that he will be facing DWI charges that have a wide array of potential outcomes, even from this point forward, even as we now know more specifics today than we've known at any point up until today. So, complex as it is, multifaceted as it is, that's the news of it all today. Well, I guess the only sort of editorializing that I'll do, and then we'll probably talk about something more fun or less unfun. It'll be interesting just to see if we get any more specifics in terms of Britt Reid leaving Arrowhead and if the Chiefs do end up being simply involved, being brought into the case in any way. I don't know that they should or shouldn't. It will just be really interesting to see where that goes. And obviously, eventually, we'll get a verdict on Britt Reid, and that'll be another news story. So I don't know how often, how long we will be updating on this. Obviously, I don't know what the results will be, but that's the news of the day. So, Tucker, with your first segment in Rudy's chair here, would you like to expand any of that, or would you like to go to break and come back and talk about offensive line play?
Well, I'm glad that you handled that because I did not want to talk about it. So,
all right, there we go. Let's do it. Let's get you out of here. Little, not really a life raft. What's the little ring called? A little floaty ring.
Lifesaver.
Little light yachts. No, those are the candy.
That's the same thing.
I think it actually is.
I got attitude with there, and I apologize. I don't know.
It's the same. It's the same. It's the same. Well, if it's, hold on, listen. It's the same thing. And
an inner tube?
I've got some people to apologize for telling them to stop eating styrofoam at the pool. I had no idea. I think inner tube is probably scientific. I think they are just called lifesavers. But if you said, hey, do you want a lifesaver?
And I said, only the orange one, please.
I would say, sure. And then if you handed me a pool floaty, I would be really unhappy.
Right, yeah.
Very let down. Is there anything, and also, the actual best lifesaver? This isn't going to, eventually tonight we're going to do power rankings with Tucker. Tucker's here, we're going to do power rankings, all right? I'm sorry, Rudy, that you're not here to do power rankings, but you should have gotten a better immune system or whatever. The best lifesaver flavor, Beards?
Orange.
Tucker?
Oh, gosh.
And not chlorine. We're doing the candies.
Well, my first thought was blue.
That's fine. That's basically a flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You're both wrong, though. The best lifesaver flavor is the spearmint ones. Make your mouth feel kind of funny. Let me tell a very light story here, and then this will be our little palate cleanser, much like a spearmint lifesaver.
Oh.
So I said just now that spearmint lifesavers make my mouth feel a little funny, and both of you looked at me pretty confused.
Are you sure those weren't drugs?
No. Look at my shirt. Of course I'm not sure. So I had a realization last night that made me remember. So I had kind of had this realization probably a couple of years ago, but it's way later in life than I think I should have had this realization. Last night, Renee and I and a couple of our friends were having, they brought over some ice cream from Betty Ray's, which is apparently now owned by not terrible people and is reopened, and that's all great. Not an endorsement, but if they wanted to bring us ice cream, I'd eat it. And one of the ice creams was like goat cheese, apricot, walnut, which is crazy because Renee had made a goat cheese ice cream for like Easter, and it was, I'm a pretty adventurous eater, but I don't love goat's cheese, and it was just kind of a shock to the system. But whenever the Betty Ray's one came around, I was like ready for it because I had just tried. I think Renee's was honestly like more, was cheesier. I was gonna say it was goatier, but I really, really, really don't want to have goat based ice cream at all. Just sort of in my mind.
Also, oh, look, is that a hoof?
Well, here's the thing: is if you were,
man, you break your teeth on that.
If you got like an extra creamy ice cream, you wouldn't say it's cowier. You would just say it's milky or whatever, right?
By the way, Goatee has a very distraught look on his face over here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We got a whole goat over there. That's it's not made of goat. It's made of goat milk. That's how goat's cheese gets made. Anywho. But I was eating a bite of the... It was pretty good, by the way. The goat's cheese, apricot, walnut ice cream. And it reminded me of the fact that walnuts make my mouth feel funny. And they always have. And so if I eat like a toasted, raw, whatever, my grandparents used to have like a nutcracker you could crack open and eat a raw walnut. From a young age, I would eat around walnuts. I like slivered almonds on some, really anything, but like on a brownie or whatever. But if someone brings a walnut brownie, I'll just eat the other one because walnuts just have a texture that then ultimately ends up making my mouth feel kind of like staticky almost. Mm. But what I definitely didn't realize until I was at least in my early 20s is that walnuts don't do that for everybody else. I had just, like, every time I explain this, people are looking at me like, wait a second. Like, yeah, you're probably just allergic to walnuts, which makes sense now, but for a long time I just sort of assumed that that walnuts just had a texture and some sort of deal with them that just made everybody's mouths feel kind of like staticky and weird and largely unpleasant. But I think I'm just allergic to walnuts. Not seriously, like I didn't break out into hives, right? They just made my mouth feel funny. Do walnuts make either of your guys' mouths feel funny?
No.
I mean, I was legally drinking before I had the thought, just the singular thought in my mind, maybe... Because if you know it to be true for you, no one just ever brings up stuff like that, right?
It's like colors.
Right.
That messes me up.
Right, because if someone's like, oh, yeah, I love... Yeah, even whatever is red to you is red to you. But if I was just like, yeah, man... For Renee has said... This was also in her early 20s. She was eating Sour Patch Kids and just offhandedly mentioned, like, I don't want to eat anymore. They make me sweat too much. I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, you know how sour candy makes you sweat? And I was like, no, I don't. I most certainly don't know that because that's simply not true. I mean, most things make me sweat, but not right. Specifically sour foods. And it's just a thing that she never realized that was unique to her. And that's, for me, that's walnuts. And maybe mint lifesavers. Is that one feels like it makes more sense, and you guys are just giving me nothing on that.
Well, they're a little chalkier. Maybe I thought that when you were talking about they make your mouth feel funny, I thought you were saying that they're just the texture, they're chalkier, and sometimes I like to grind away at them with my teeth, you know? You put them in your back molars?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I don't put my back molars.
Oh, where do you grind
sometimes
your...
Like, I guess sometimes I'll just kind of break them up and maybe chomp them down a little bit.
Hmm. How about that?
What can you guys think about any... Have you guys... And then we can break. Give any... foods or anything like that that have a reaction that you've never really considered might not be normal. Because like spicy food, really spicy food makes everybody sweat a little.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your mouth hurt. So you don't ever talk about spicy. But if I would have said that in Beards, you would have been like, what? Spicy food makes me have to pee really bad. We'd all be like...
That would be weird.
We'd be like... But it wouldn't be weird to you because it would have just been the life you've led this far.
Well, I will say, my girlfriend Tara found out she was allergic to avocado kind of the same way. We were one time just like eating guac, and she's like, I can't eat too much guac because it makes my mouth kind of funny. And I'm like, hang on.
Yeah! That's not universal!
Like, I love guac. I love avocados. And when we go get sushi, she'll be like, oh, I can't eat the ones with avocado because it makes my mouth tingle. I said, you are allergic to avocado, essentially. It's like, then my throat starts swelling up, and I can't breathe very much.
This is normal, I swear.
And I can't figure out why all these dang millennials like avocados so much. It doesn't make any sense to me. They just make my mouth feel funny and my throat swell up.
You might be allergic.
Oh! Nuts. Oh, nuts. I'm allergic to funny walnuts. Make my mouth feel funny. Let's take a break. Whenever we come back, we will probably talk about NFL draft stuff with Tucker. I want to pick his brain on a couple of things. We talked to Jordan Foote last week about a particular prospect or two that I think are kind of interesting. And at this point, we got through another weekend without the Chiefs like accidentally tripping and falling into Russell Okung and just adding him to the roster. So we'll talk with Tucker a little bit about some of the the prospects coming around the corner, and also what the Chiefs are going to do leading up to the draft. Are they done? Will they make a move after the draft? They don't get a time if they like. Draft's in like 2 weeks. You guys good? Brett Veach, you good? Really, probably sign a tackle. We'll talk about that whenever we come back.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Unbutton. 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 Zip.
With Joshua Briscoe. On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Tucker just showed me something alarming during the break. The first alarming thing was that I just found out that Ronald Odor is with the Yankees now, which I think I missed this weekend. I think I saw that he went somewhere. I don't know.
It's DFA'd.
I knew he was DFA'd because I recognized exactly maybe zero names from that opening day Rangers roster.
Yep.
But he has a majestic beard, or had, and then signed with the Yankees, who still in the year 1940 that we're currently living in, have a no facial hair policy. So he had to shave his beard. It's not quite Beards. Have you seen this yet?
I have not, no.
Can you just like drop him the link or something there, Tucker?
So you don't have to put it up. Out?
You don't have to put it up on the feed. I just want you to see it.
Because
it's not quite, I think it was a TMZ story.
Yeah,
what was the headline? Can we Google it easily for Beards?
MLB's Ronald Odor shaves famous beard after trade to Yankees. I feel weird, end quotes.
It's not quite James Harden beardless, but it's unflattering.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
I just love the angle of that picture. I know this isn't very
it's
good for
bad radio.
Radio.
I really just wanted to get Beards's beard expertise on it. But yeah, no, the picture he takes the angle at is really unflattering. He went from having just a very you can go see it now at Tucker D. Franklin. There's a branding opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a very flattering look. His beard, I think, was well placed. And I think going to New York, this is one of those rare instances where it's bad for your brand. Because you look, I believe, as Tucker said during the break, like a child actor. Which is not what you want to do, because he's 27.
Is that all he is?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually was going to guess older also, but the TMZ story says he's 27. It's a little less alarming from a more flattering angle. There's a video down there of him actually talking, and it's fine. But the original, the angle he chose is, it was a choice, and not a very good one.
I don't know if you saw, when he got DFA'd, the Rangers tweeted out like, it looked like a memorial thing, and it had his punch of Jose Bautista.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was very, very good.
I mean, name a better moment.
There's not one.
There's not one. There's absolutely not one. He's a fan favorite forever. Because that dude's got a right hook. I think it was a right hook. It doesn't really matter.
It sent Batista's glasses flying.
Yeah.
So good.
Really strong. Anyway. I figured that we would have, I don't know why I thought this. I thought we might have something sort of new-ish to talk about for the Chiefs this week. That's not their new special teamer fullback or Austin Ryder in one multiverse to the left, which is how I refer to Austin Blythe from this point forward. Like, we can start on this part. I am so surprised that we are here on April 12th and currently the Chiefs starting left tackle is Martinez Rankin. I just thought I would have bet and lost a lot of money that there would have been, if it's not the Joe Tooney blue chip edition, that there would have been an Austin Blythe level edition or a Kyle Long level edition or Mike Rimmers. I guess really if the season started today, Lucas Niang is probably your starting left tackle. Probably.
He's got the arms.
Probably. He's got those long, long arms, which is so important. I don't know. So, Tucker, where are you at right now, knowing that are you also equally or somewhat less surprised that we've made it this far? And also, I keep getting more surprised, like, every day. Because Alejandro Villanueva and Russell Okung are both still out there, and maybe this is my cutoff time and to where I should stop thinking that something is going to change. But, like, I was really surprised whenever we got to the end of March and they didn't have a left tackle. I'm now 12 days more surprised than that because it just keeps sort of evolving. So how do you feel about the fact that we are where we are right now with the Chiefs, specifically that left tackle spot?
Well, I think the way the situation has evolved, I'm no longer surprised that it doesn't. I've prepared myself for it to be an after the draft signing.
Yeah.
I believe on May 5th, I might be wrong on this, but I think May 5th, free agent signings don't go towards compensatory selections.
That sounds close enough to being right.
That's good enough for me, I guess. So I expect that both those guys to sign after that.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of at the point now where I'm like, okay, well, the Chiefs aren't going to have their left tackle. What just happened?
I'm afraid that a bird hit the window.
I think so, too.
This has happened multiple times. You keep talking. I trust you.
Yeah, so welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports with Tucker Franklin.
Well, hold on.
No, but this is what I think. I think that they are going to draft a guy for the future. And I know that kind of sounds weird to draft a guy for the future when you don't have somebody for the now. I'm not too 100% stoked on this tackle class as I once was either. So that's a little tough for me as well, because when you talk about arm length, I know that you've talked about arm length plenty. I've talked about arm length.
I want to talk about arm length more in a second.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and start that conversation then, because I think that it might not matter to you and I, but to the people calling the shots for the Kansas City Chiefs, I think it matters for them. Ken Swanson did something really good diving
into
that.
Can't say his name on the Saber Airways, please. Okay. He's dead to the show, friend of the show.
Bleepson.
Bleepson sounds like an alien. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, he did something really good with arm length and looking at tackles and the decision making for the higher ups for the Chiefs, which is honestly what matters.
Yep.
What I think doesn't really matter. But my opinion is that I don't think that arm length really matters. It's what you do with the arms that matters. But, you know, if you look at Andy Reid, 34 and a quarter, that's the magic number right there. And, you know, Lucas Niang hits that right on the money. They kind of reinforce that whole thing. So I'm really curious to see what the Chiefs are going to do. And it's one of those things where I think about it probably way too much than I probably should.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling as confident as I once was.
So I've looked at the patio. There is not a bird on it currently.
There wasn't a bird-shaped imprint on the glass anywhere?
Not that I saw. I wasn't looking over there whenever we heard the noise. It could have just been a wind thing or something, but it's not very windy right now. My thought, most likely because of sort of a muffled sound, would be that perhaps a bird was coming in and then realized what was about to happen and then just had a light little interaction with the window, as opposed to the numerous times, at least twice while I've been either here or over on the other side of the glass, a bird has flown into the window hard enough to either mess up its day or end its day and all the days after that because it died. There was a sports Saturday or sports Sunday that I was running the board for 4 or 5 years ago. Is that right? Yeah, probably so. 3 or 4 years ago. And a bird hit that window so hard that that bird was gone before it hit the bottom of the patio or whatever, by the bottom of the balcony. That was a TKO. That was a fatality. And then there was another day where a bird hit the window and couldn't fly, but was still out there. And it was delicious. So I would say it's kind of win-win for everybody except for the bird. Now, I think somebody ended up picking it up and taking it to like a wildlife center or something. Mm. Not the dead one. The dead one, I think, eventually may have just gotten.
That was when you ate.
I mean, it died instantly, right? So right. I think it's probably still fresh. Anyway, you talked to Jim Mora Jr. on the Ref and the Kicker podcast. You can hear Tucker every single weekday. Just subscribe to Ref and the Kicker wherever you get your podcasts. But you talked to Jim Mora Jr. about arm length specifically. I thought that whole conversation with him was really interesting. Can you explain? You say that you don't really necessarily care about it that much, but you're pretty confident that the Chiefs do. I know that is largely coming from some of the ways that Jim had framed it as a dude who's been in draft rooms and has been a decision maker both on the NFL and the college levels. So why do you think it ends up being important, and what did you take away from your conversation with Jim about it? Because I did think this was super interesting.
Yeah, I went into that conversation thinking, okay, I'm going to ask this question, and I'm going to have everyone be calmed down. Everyone's going to calm down after this.
Yeah,
he's going to say, oh, no, it doesn't. It matters how good they are at the position. You know, I was going to get that answer. And I asked it, and without hesitation, he said, yeah, that matters. And I went, wait, what?
Like, it's funny when that happens.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
So I obviously had to dive into that a little bit more as a good journalist that I am. Incredible. So we dug into it, and it's interesting because he said, you know, you need redeeming qualities with a player. A player can have 35-inch arms, but if he can't drop step as an offensive tackle, he's essentially useless. But right. If he has average feet and maybe his arms are 33 inches, not 34 and a quarter, you can say, okay, well, at least he can drop step. He's athletic enough to do it. Might not have the hands, but he's got a good punch.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, yeah, you can work with that. And that's something else I really took away from that is redeeming qualities are important with players. But if you think about the Steve Spagnuolo prototype defensive end, mm-hmm. you might think, where's Tucker going with this? But think about that.
Yeah.
Okay?
There's a type.
Mm-hmm.
There is
a type. 6 foot four, mm-hmm. 260, 280 pounds, around that ballpark, 270 really, 34-inch arms. So if you're thinking about Steve Spagnuolo having a prototype of 34-inch arms, why would you draft a tackle that has less than 34-inch arms? If you know that other defensive edge rushers are going to have 34-inch arms, they can get into your chest really easily with 34-inch arms if you have 33, 32-inch arms. So now you have to counteract that on the offensive side. You have to say, okay, we want guys with at least 34-inch arms. We want 34 and a quarter. That's what Andy Reid likes.
Because you've got to be able to get your hands on that on that pass rusher or else you're bleeped.
Yeah. So that's what it's coming down to. It's kind of the, well, you can do this. And so, okay, we'll do that too. And I think it's a big, huge game of, you know, these edge rushers now are really good athletes. They are sometimes the best athletes on the field. And that's saying a lot because there's a lot of offensive talent. But if you look at, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, who's just a specimen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, J.J. Watt's a specimen, too. He's a large human being. He might not be as fast as some of these other guys. But now you got quick guys. You got guys who are hurdle champions in college and high school. Really strong athletes going on the edge rushers. And then you have these big, huge offensive linemen. You're asking them to move backwards to stop these guys getting to the quarterback. So you have to kind of have these physical traits, especially on the outside. You got to be able to widen the edge, too. That was interesting. He said length comes in many forms. Jim Moore Jr. said that. Comes in a long torso. It comes in long arms.
I just think that's a good thing to keep in mind.
Long legs?
Sure. That's most of the things, right?
I just
think it's important to note length comes in many forms. That's
it
all.
Does. It
you can
does.
Just mark all that beard. You can see if you can get anything out of that. I don't know. I like having more Tucker-based liners, and he gave us a little nugget of wisdom there.
Yep. I'm just dropping nuggets everywhere. But
I think it's really interesting because it really does seem like one of those things where if you're going, listen, is this, if we like this, if we like everything about this dude at 31, but his arms are a quarter inch shorter than our sort of usual starting point, do we make an exception there?
Right.
It sounds insane to say, oh man, it's just if his arms are just a quarter inch longer. But the other thing that Jim mentioned that I thought was interesting, because he was saying, you can make your exceptions if you say, you know, like you're saying about all the tools, right? If everything looks good, but the arms are a little shorter than you'd like to be, you think, you know what, for whatever reason, I think this guy can overcome this particular measurement weakness that he's got in this spot. You can do that sometimes. You can do that some amount. And eventually, I don't know where that line is. I don't think he even really purported to know exactly where that line is. It's probably not really consistent. But eventually, if you've made exceptions at three of your five spots, at both tackle positions, all of a sudden now you're dealing with the ramifications of those, because you're now at a legit disadvantage at something that is sort of, you line up against me, I line up against you, we see who's got a bigger reach. Like, so I do think that's an interesting other little wrinkle to it, where you can forego the prototype some undetermined amount, and then at some point it also comes back to bite you.
Right, and I thought that was something I didn't really even think about either, because it seems like it's a very simple thing when you talk about arm length, right? So you have a long arms or you don't.
Right.
It matters or it doesn't. But then when you start thinking about it, okay, if you allow these guys, I think Cam Irving and Mike Rimmers are the only tackles to play for Andy Reid that have had under 34 and a quarter inch arms. Those are the only two tackles to do it. And when you start looking at that and you realize, okay, he hasn't really wavered from this prototype of arm length, look at the success that he's had on the offensive line. He's had some pretty good offensive lines in his career.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, you think, okay, and if you allow so many exceptions, and like I mentioned earlier, like this wasn't even something that even crossed my mind of, okay, yeah, you allow one exception, then you allow two, you allow three, then you're playing with a bunch of players that you don't really like in total. And then you're playing with a bunch of players that don't really have your prototype. And I think that that's going to be really interesting coming up at pick number 31, because when you look at this tackle class, I had a good conversation with Bleep Bleepson about this. And we said that it became a really good tackle class, right? It was a really good tackle class coming into an elite guard class. If you look at all of these tackles that have come in and you look at the arm length, you've got a ton of guys in the top 20 that have tackle length or guard length arms.
I think it was Sam Hayes and his historian Arrowhead Report. It's all in the family, baby. Mm-hmm. It's all we're the royal family up in here. We're all related and we're all kissing. What? R.I.P. Prince Philip. But I think Sam was the one who wrote that of like the guy of the tackle class with the arm length is also the guy probably least likely to actually play tackle among that group at the NFL level, being Alex Leatherwood. Yeah. Is that correct? Yeah. Is that general? Okay, I want to make sure. I believe that Sam's work was right. I was concerned that my memory might not be. So, like, that just, it would be one of several reasons that I would have liked the Chiefs to have signed a competent tackle at this point. We got to take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to see how quickly Breeze can turn those liners around. In all likelihood, we'll talk a little more draft stuff. Then we'll talk more about it with Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest coming up in 10 minutes.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Whenever we come back, we'll talk about football. That's a promise that we probably will not be able to live up to. That's next.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We need to all measure our arms. I just want to know. We got to put this into context. Credible Hulk on Twitch said, well, I know why I only made it to D2, 30-inch arms. Imagine seeing a 6-foot tall O-line in the NFL. I want to know. I don't think I got a great wingspan. You know, I think I could keep, but I think I could keep, I think I could keep Tucker off me, but I don't know. I'd need to bring up my high school era, forearm pads that I was rocking. Why did any coach ever teach you to block with your forearms, by the way? Like, that's not pretty early on, but that's not good technique at all. I did keep the forearm pads for a long time, though, because I ended up covered in splotchy bruises and whatnot, and I kind of liked the idea. I liked being able to just throw those suckers around with no consequences for myself. But it's not good. This is the
block shoulder
block. Forearm is not. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, it's bad.
Not a good technique. It's probably why I didn't go pro. And not my 9-inch arms. I'm a literal T-Rex. I've got my hands, which are normal size, and then just basically that much more space. You know who I bet has legitimately maybe borderline Andy Reid qualifying arms? Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. He is taller than you'd think, and I bet his wingspan is longer than you'd think. We'll talk to Matt Derrick about his wingspan whenever we come back.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.